This is the Reading Instruction Show. I am your hostess, always the genial one, Dr. Andy Johnson. Topic of today's podcast, the context of crisis. Now, if you were to consume a lot of popular media today related to education, you would be led to believe that there is a reading crisis. And apparently it's all deeply concerning. Now, I can't help but wonder if this current crisis is a new crisis or an extension of an old crisis. In 1983, the United States was said to be at risk because of a crisis that started in 1963, and this was the National Commission on Excellence in Education. So, was that crisis ever resolved? That 1983 crisis? Is this crisis an extension of that crisis? Or is it a brand new crisis? In 1983, teachers were told they needed to get back to the basics. Did they not get back far enough? Did we not get basic enough? Did our basic backtracking not take? Do we need to get back to the basics much harder? Are we still basic backtracking? And if we're not getting back to the basics, what are we getting back to? So let's understand what a crisis is. A crisis is a situation that has reached a critical phase. It's a situation of danger or instability in which a solution is needed. And I can hear Strother Martin saying, "What we got here is a situation." Now, a crisis is the point in a TV show where Commissioner Gordon shines the bat spotlight up into the sky to alert Batman. And this was in a time before cell phones, of course. Only Batman can bring us back to the pre-crisis stage. Now, if the only information I consumed was information vetted by the decision makers in popular media, American public media, or government agencies, I too would tend to agree. I too would be back out in the backyard, shining my flashlight up in the sky, wondering when Batman was going to come to save us from the penguins and jokers who are all causing so much havoc in our public schools. Where's Batman? If I were to rely on information provided by the people who benefited from certain outcomes, I too would believe that there's a horrible crisis, a horrible reading crisis. If I smiled and nodded my head like a bobblehead doll every time information was given to me by those who have a social, political, or economic stake in the game, I too would think that there were massive numbers of children who weren't reading. Massive numbers of children. And I'd be working hard to find an instructional vaccine to prevent children from catching this illiteracy. I'd be doing that instead of making podcasts. I'd be out looking for the holy grail of reading instruction, the magic method for teaching children to read that real scientists have proven to be the best. In short, I'd be a card-carrying member of the science of reading movement. But I'm not. And why not? Because of context. It matters, you see. Now, the current science of reading movement is based on inadequate, incomplete, or inaccurate information related to teaching, learning, reading, and learning to read. It relies heavily on decontextualized data. Context matters. It matters a lot when you're looking to make sense of things like reading and reading instruction. But data must always be understood and evaluated in the context in which it was found. A single research study can only be fully understood in the context of a wider array of research studies. And it takes a wide array of research studies to develop a theory. And theories must be understood in the context of a paradigm. And paradigms tend to reflect social, cultural, and political changes of the times. So, to understand the current science of reading movement, you must put it in the social, political, and economic context of our time and in the context of past educational reform movements. And yes, we have had iterations of the current science of reading movement before. And these past reading reforms always took place in the context of great social, political, and cultural changes. And like today's reforms, these past reforms usually promoted simple answers for complex situations. Now, let's take a look at the dustbin. Like past reforms, this current science of reading movement will have a lifespan of 5 to 8 years. So if I'm right, you'll still hear about me sometime in 2031. My book that I will have written on this subject will be in the third or fourth edition. But if I'm wrong, I'll be just a silly little bald man left in the dustbin of academic obscurity. But here's the thing. I would love to be proven wrong. I would love nothing more than to see these new reading initiatives produce measurable gains in reading comprehension in 2031. I'd be overjoyed if more children developed a deep love of reading. I'd be thrilled if in 2031 there was an increase in voluntary reading. I'd be delighted if more children would be able to read and understand more complex text. I'd be tickled pink if we could see more complex forms of thinking and writing. And I would be very, very pleased if children were better able to use reading and writing for real-world purposes, and if more children were able to achieve their full literacy potential. I'd be happy. I'd love to be in that dustbin. But we've seen this movie before. One only needs to look back at the Reading First Initiative of 2002 to see how this movie will end. And the question is this: when this reform fails, as it inevitably will, who will be blamed? I suspect it will be teachers, professors, and public education. I highly suspect that some for-profit entity will again have a new fix-it-up remedy to sell us. But the sad thing is, in the interim, many good teachers will have left the classroom, and millions of dollars will have been wasted. And children will have wasted hours of prime instructional learning time learning how to sound out lists of decontextualized and nonsense words. They will have instead been force-fed a bland diet of poorly written decodable books without pictures. Then they'll be asked to love reading by some celebrity holding a book. This is the Reading Instruction Show. I'm your host, Dr. Andy Johnson.